Accession number 14585, reel 2.
Mr. Scarlato, reel 2.
Okay. Well, when we came over there, then the flying boat, they give us exact the course, that the distance was about 50 miles. And the course of the Japanese fleet was 210, and the speed was 10 miles. And later on, we got a second message, and they told us that he was changing of the course. But the captain, he was afraid to come between the Japanese and between the wall. So he changed his course as well, and he came down in front, and then we go submerged. The first shot he did, that was on a merchant ship at a distance from about 1500 meters. But they were missing, because the mistake the commander made, that he fired the two stern torpedoes too quick. That will say one maybe hit the other one. They were missing. But later on, the torpedo tubes were ready, and the men were staying by the fire handle in state that electric was defect, and then he fired the other two torpedoes from the bow, and they hit a big merchant ship. Then we get some depth charges at long distance, so they didn't do anything to us. Then after on, he hit a second merchant ship. And then at the moment, it was very swell over there, about 9 meters. And it was too bad, but this captain still kept on. And after a long time, he got a chance, about 800 meters. And he fired the other bow tubes and hit them with two torpedoes. Then we have to use our training tubes. And he sunk the third ship with one of the tubes, and we were loading the bow tubes again with the spare torpedoes we had in the bow room. And we fixed it within 10 minutes. So they were ready. And then the last two torpedoes he fired on a big tanker. But when we were in that swallow water, there was a moment the captain couldn't see anything through the periscope. Then he put the periscope down and up again, because there were so many Japanese floating in the water that was one he had kept the tilt, the periscope. That was the main thing. Well, after that, he was thinking to start with gunfire. And the youngest officer knew how to say, "Be not crazy, don't do that." But he was the man hit and run later on. So we sank 4 ships in that battle on December 23. Everything was gone the way it must go. And the depth charges, that was a funny thing. Because when we are in training on the submarine, then we have to do a test. And there was the submarine commander who came on board, and you get bandages for your eyes, and then you say, "Blow tank 3, or do this, start the bubble pump." We say, "Oh, the man is crazy." But I can tell you, he was very clever, because when we got the first depth charges, all the bulbs were gone. And you got darkness. And still carry on all right. So it was a very good training. It takes about 9 months of a year before you were trained for the submarines. And when you see the American submarines, they had training for 3 months, but everybody was specialized. In our Navy, small Navy, you have to do a lot of jobs. You have to know how about a lot of jobs. So when you can do it, I have to do it. Helmsman, the diving rudders, you have to help with the torpedoes. Sometimes you have to help in the machine engine room as well. And that is the time that takes about 9 months of a year before you finish your training, before you get your vacation, that you were trained for the submarines. And that was the difference. And I think that has been our good luck, that we know what also happened in the submarine and what you have to do. That was the action of the K-14. And later on, we found our way back to Surabaya. And when we came over there, well, there were a lot of high-class people, and there were also family over there. And the captain, he brought his ship in the harbour, and he have put on big lights, you know, on the jetty, and with a big voice he said, "Switch off the bloody lights!" Because he couldn't see anything. So he have to switch off the light. That was his welcome in Surabaya. And then we got leave for about 6 days. That was say, we stay in harbour for repair, put them on, torpedoes and things like that, to get ready for the second patrol. That was the K-14 with the first patrol. The second patrol, our own commander was still ill, and then we got on the second patrol, we got the first officer, Brunsting, because Van der Wel Groeneveld, he got for this action the highest decoration you can have in the Netherlands. In Britain you would say that is the VC. In Holland he got the MWO. And here you get a picture of the crew. And here you got a picture of this commander of the K-14 when we were on the passage on the north coast of Borneo.
You're showing me a photograph of Wel Groeneveld.
Yeah, that was his name. But he go back to his own ship, the K-18, and we go on patrol met the K-14 met the Lieutenant Commander Brunsting. Then we get orders to go to the Strait of Makassar. And this is the strait.
You between Celebes and Borneo.
Yeah. That's the place. And here you got that island Terrakhan. You see? And when we were just here by this small island, Pulu Laut, Pulu is island, Laut is the name of the island, we're waiting for orders. And it was on Sunday. We came on service, and the Sunday was a special day of the other days, because that was the only day that we serve chocolate milk. All other days we serve coffee at 10 o'clock. And the chocolate milk was also brought up to the Brits. And on the Brits was the commanding officer Brunsting, the first officer van der Croft, and a couple lookout and the helmsman. And the weather was very, very bad. Heavy clouds, a lot of rain. And he was drinking his chocolate milk. And he just wanted to take the last out of the bottom. Starboard aboard! The helmsman put him starboard. Dive! So in a free fall, he came downstairs. He saw a Japanese plane coming out of the clouds. Motor not running. And when we go, the boys came in. One bomb on port side, and one bomb unstable. So when he had kept his course straight, he wouldn't have won. The torpedo front room had won on the stern. So we were quite lucky. So when we're going to dive, close the bulkhead, bulkhead go open again. And then the officer van der Croft, he was hiding behind the periscope wolfbreaker. He came through and he just had some wounded on the back. For the rest, no trouble. But later on, we came on service and a few of them were just looking on the deck. The gun, because he was firing also the plane, .50 Panzer bullets. I got in the gun. I got a lump inside the bin for the munition for holes, on the Brits there were holes and things like that, and sharp work. But everybody was quite all right, and the ship was all right as well. So we got a telegram from the commander-in-chief in the Far East. There was a Japanese convoy in the Strait of Makassar, Koers Balikpapan, destroy with inset from personnel and material. To get that convoy of the Japanese, we have to go on service to make enough speed. But the weather was that very, very bad that when we came over there, you didn't have any sight. You can hear them on the hydrophones, but you didn't have the right bearing, you didn't have the right speed. So we were not very lucky, and we have to go back to Surabaya for the repairs and an overhaul to get ready for the third patrol.
What happened in the third patrol?
Well, the third patrol, that will say then we start with the Battle of the Java Sea. On the third patrol, we left Surabaya, and I was looking out on the bridge with a friend of me. He told me, well, I put my locket empty, and he just put a small note in it. Nothing in here. Greetings of the Api Passage. Because he knew we never came back. I told him, you better keep your mouth, because we've got a lot of crew here on board of the ship, and petty officers and officers who be married, and he left a wife and children. He said, don't talk about it. So when we were in the Java Sea, there were a lot of telegrams coming in. You got the big fleet, you know, also British ships, and also was all disappointed, because we hear the story from the Prince of Wales and the Repulse. They were sent over to the Bayesian. We have set a few from airplanes for defense in Singapore. So there was be our Allied fleet, there was no air force. There was no coordination. And the Japanese, they had a damn good coordination between fleet and the aircraft. And don't forget that in the Far East, we had about 60 airfields, we don't know, but they've been there on the islands. But they are not protected. So the Japanese, when they can go from airfield to airfield, and there was no defense. So it was very soon that the Japanese planes came to Surabaya to bomb Surabaya, the Navy Yard and things like that. But in this Java Sea, when you see the ships, they came into the Java Sea and the Japanese fleet. The Japanese, they had guns with a velocity from 1200 meters. Our guns had a velocity of 900 meters. The Japanese guns had a range from 21,000 meter, or guns 70,000 meter. But to when the battle came on, our ships, the Allied ships, have to go about 4,000 meter before they have a chance to get a hit. And that has happened in the Java Sea. But what we have to do, we had a patrol here in these roads near Sumatra. Then we get short of oil, so we try to get oil here near Priok. And when we were on the way, we get the order to go back, because the Japanese, they have put mines over here, so we go and do it. And then over here, we recognize a Japanese cruiser, but it was a long distance, so the commander, he fired two torpedoes, and they were missing because it was full up in daytime. And they have seen the bubbles of the torpedo. Then when we got short on oil, we have to go to Strait Sunda to leave the Java Sea. They got on the north, you got the Thousand Islands. And John and I, we were look out on the Brits, looking for any ships. And when we were sailing through the beautiful islands, you know, and it was full moon, and you see the nice beaches and the palm trees and things like that, you can't understand that there is a war. That's emotional. And just when we were over there, we were through the shallow water, we recognized two Japanese destroyers, so we go submerged. And through this street, never a submarine have gone through that submerged. Because you get different heights, and you get a lot of stream, so you get the quarrying of the water.
Turbulence.
Yeah, turbulent over there. So I was sitting on the diving rudder, and when we were submerged, we got all the heating of the engine. We were sweating, just a towel or your back, you can bring them out. It was very, very hot. And the main thing was the depth. We didn't care, but just keep the submarine underwater all the time, so you don't go on surface, because the Japanese were all around with depth charges and things like that. And that was carrying on for about 12 hours. To get the submarine out from here till there. And then we came on service just for a while to get some fresh air. Then the captain said to the officer of the watch, because we didn't have sleep for about 4 days or 3 nights, the captain said to the officer of the watch, now you go to sleep. And when you wake up, you've been off in the Indian Ocean or you've been in heaven. Good night. Then you found here a small swallow place, and he put a submarine on the seabed. And everybody could go asleep to have a rest, except the person who were on watch. That was the moment that the cook should make a meal. And what we had on board with the ship were all tin stuff. You only can get 4 days fresh feed, you know, and keep your meat under the fat and things like that, and fresh vegetables, and for the rest you always have to use tins. So he was trying to make some food tins, a big pan. And we just lay down, you didn't sleep because you were too tired to sleep. And then he dropped one of those things on the bottom, that everybody, you know, that was the reaction of the depth charges, shoes and everything, put it to the head of the cook, the poor booker, he couldn't help it. But it was the reaction of that. And then he came on later day and sailing on the west coast of Sumatra, and we have to go to Colombo. And we must look out, because still we're within the range of the Japanese planes, and of course there was a Japanese plane, but he keep long distance, he didn't came near us. And we know with this island on the west coast, there was a tanker on the island Nias, and we can get fuel over there. But the captain say, I don't go over there, because what we know, I expect the Japanese know it as well. So with most economic speed, we came in Colombo. And there was the submarine tender that we came beside, and we only had for 1 day all left. So well done. And when we came on board the ship, there was a man who was going over the canteen, So we go off the gangway. Everybody get them one bottle beer. Joy life with alcohol. And that was all the training we got after we left on the third patrol from the Java ship. Later came in the K-15 from Boetselaar, and the O-19 came in as well. And we had some repair over there. But it couldn't be long because I think Summerfield was the commander-in-chief of the British fleet. But when they were within the range of the bombers from the Japanese, the most of the Japanese fleet, that was very clever, were going to the east coast of Africa, Mombasa. And then later on we go from Colombo, we go to Bombay, dry dock for repair, and then we get order to go for repair to America. Well, then we left Bombay and we go on the road to Madagascar. And there's just been a battle in Madagascar because there were some French submarines that were just on the beach, damaged. And I hear the story that the German and Vichy friends and the Japanese, they meet each other there in Madagascar. And there were submarines that just did a job as cargo ship. That the Japanese to give rubber, and the Japanese to got spare parts and other instruments special from Carl Zeiss Jena. But Lieutenant Nieuwenhuis and I, we have to go on shore, try to get some potatoes, because we hardly had any food on board. So we were walking for hours and hours, and then we could get a box, a wooden box with dry potatoes. So we were walking back for hours on the submarine, and we had dried potatoes just for one day. And then we go to the Strait of Madagascar, and then we came in East London. That was the first place. The first thing that I have to do, that is to find a ship chandler to get some food for the crew and special for the watchmen. And my mate, John, he's still alive, he lives in London. He said, well, we go on shore. I said, of course we go on shore. He said, but I have to wait till the food is on board and I have to make sure of it. Well, where can we meet each other? He said, well, that's not difficult. I meet you in the first pub on the right-hand side in the main street. This is all right. So I was waiting for about 1 hour, and then the food came on board, oranges, potatoes, fresh vegetables and things like that. So the boys were all right. I get changed and I go ashore, and I walk up in the main street, and I see John walking with his tie in his hand and a big turkey walking in the main street, because he never had any good food, so he was drunk after a couple of pints, I think. I said, John, what you be doing here? He said, I win this turkey, because there was a Red Cross lottery in that pub, and I win the turkey. He said, well, what you doing with it on the road? Waiting for you. He said, come on, we go back to the pub. Back to the pub. He said, put the turkey in. Just had a half pint of lager. There was a lady coming in. Malika was her name. And John said, do you want a turkey? A kalkoen in Dutch. Well, you don't have a turkey. And the barkeeper said, yes, of course, you're staying here. He says, all right, I take the turkey, but then you come alone, and you have also your part of the turkey. That's all right. John, get the turkey, put him in the car. You come in the car, she got two beautiful daughters. Also in the car. She was married with a very old man, and he got there a biscuit factory. So, puts the turkey, make him ready, the cool box, the freezer there, open them up, you can drink and you can eat. And we had a great time over there for John's turkey. That was in East London. So we had a good time there for about a week. And then we get order. To go to Freetown. And don't forget, there were a lot of German submarines just around the Cape. Because the Cape, that was a shipping line for the Persian Gulf. And the American and British sent a lot of war material round the Cape to the Persian Gulf. And the other shipping line was from American England to Murmansk around the north. So there were a lot of German submarines, so we afterwards. We had very, very rough weather. I remember that. And then we came in Freetown, just an overhaul and things like that. And then we have the post for Dakar. That was the moment of the landing of the American troops in North Africa. And I don't know what orders the captain got, but we have to be ready for action. And later on, I heard when the French fleet came out of harbor, then we have to go in action when they don't surrender, but they came out of harbor with the guns straight up and the white flag. So no trouble with that, no action. The big ships were going to the States, but they have put all the drownings and everything on board overboard, so it was hard to repair. The American never do anything about the bloody ships, and the French had a good time in the States. And then from Freetown and posted to Dakar, we go across to Halifax in Bermuda. Then we recognize a ship that's supposed to be a German raider. So they kept them on the go in action. But it was far away. So they call up gun alarm. So we shall fight him with a gun. He gave a distance 40,000 yards. This gun doesn't fire 14,000 yards, 12,000, that's all. Was a rough sheep. But he fired back and quite alright. So he finished the gun alarm because I couldn't reach him. The distance was too big. And we go submerged. And then he tried to fire a couple of torpedoes, missing. Distance was too great. And now is this a funny joke? It was not a German raider, it was a Dutch boat. Later in the pub in Scotland, my friend Theo de Geu, he lives in Maasland, he was staying in a pub. And there was a merchantman in the pub, and he got a bronze cross. He said, well, you must have done something in this war. He said, yes. He said, we have sunk a German submarine. Our silhouette was the same as a German submarine. He said, when? He said, that and that date. He said, cross. He said, that and that date? That's your date. That was our submarine, and you didn't sink it. He said, what ship you were? You were the Johanna Jacoba.
The which but ship?
Johanna Jacoba, a Dutch ship. That was a big joke that happened. And I tell you another joke. Then we came in Halifax, Bermuda. So we didn't have any supply. The food was really up.